Great. So we're up to the third lecture now. In the previous lectures, we started off with the wave function and then we moved up to Dirac notation. And in this lecture, we're going to look at the path integral formalism and quantum mechanics. So back in the 1920s, Schrödinger and Heisenberg and other people developed the standard formulation of quantum mechanics. And then in 1933, Dirac pointed out that the action plays, a central role in classical mechanics, but it doesn't seem to appear in quantum mechanics. And so he suggested that the propagator in quantum mechanics should correspond to e to the I s on h bar, where s is the classical action. And so in 1948, Feynman developed Dirac's suggestion, and he derived this third formulation of quantum mechanics called the path integral formulation. And in this formulation, the propagator is the sum over all possible paths, not just the classical path. And so why are we interested in this third formulation? Especially in quantum mechanics, because it turns out that pretty much all of the calculations that you can do are more difficult to do in the path integral formalism than in the standard formalism. But as you'll see in your quantum field theory lectures, it turns out to be very useful when you're dealing with quantum field theory. So here we're just going to look at it in the context of quantum mechanics for pedagogical reasons, but it'll actually be useful when you start doing quantum field theory. And also, as Feynman pointed out in his original paper, there is a pleasure in recognizing old things from a new point of view. So, as always, we're going to begin with the Hamiltonian for a single particle. Which is given by the kinetic part plus a potential. And so the question that we want to ask is if the particle is at position q at time t, what's the probability amplitude that it's going to be at position q prime at a later time? T equals T prime, or capital T as I'm going to use here. So quantum mechanically, that is given by amplitude. So A is going to stand for amplitude. So here we have the state at position q, and this is now our state as a function of time. So it's going to, sorry, our state at time capital T, and then we're going to just take the overlap between position q prime and the state as it evolves. As a function of the Hamiltonian. And so for this lecture, I'm also going to set h bar equal to 1. H bar equal to 1. Okay, and I'm going to define this thing, this amplitude, as a propagator. That goes. Takes the particle from position q at time 0 to, maybe I want to have, oh yeah, let's go with my notes. Position q times 0 to a position q prime at time capital T. Okay, and so we're going to derive an expression for this amplitude in the form of a sum over all possible paths going from q to q prime. And in doing so, we're going to derive the path integral for quantum mechanics. So historically, Feynman came up with this in a different way, and they just showed that it's equivalent to the standard formulation of quantum mechanics. But it's nice to see it presented in the way that I'm going to do here. Okay, so we begin by separating this time evolution into two parts. So now we go from t equals 0 to t equals t1 to t equals capital T. Yeah, 2 t equals capital T. And then we can insert a resolution of identity in here. Which allows us to write and so someone actually came up to me and asked about this notation that I'm using, which is this cross here. So that's just me being lazy and sloppy. And so what I'm trying to denote is a outer product. So we've got a cat and a bra. But quite often you'll see people just write this as something that looks like that. So here I just have an outer product of the position q1. Okay, so now what we can do is rewrite this in terms of a product of two propagators integrated over this position q1. And so we can think about this as a sum over all of the intermediate points q1 between the point q and q prime. Okay, so then we've seen how we can do this just by separating it into two points, but we can just repeat this division many, many, many times and just split it up into equal time steps. So we're going to split it up into a large number n of time intervals, which allows us to write And here I've defined this time interval delta as being capital T divided by the large number n. And so now we're going to do exactly the same thing as we did here. We'll insert a bunch of resolutions of identity. And I'm going to skip a step where I was just going to write this with each of the resolutions of identity in the middle. And but if you were to do that and then rearrange things in the same way that we rearranged it over there, we can rewrite the propagator as a product of integrals over all of the intermediate points. And so I've kind of changed notation here because previously the propagator had a time argument as well, but because here it's, you know, split up into equal times, we don't really need to keep track of the different times. And so now I'm just labeling my propagator by the position coordinates. But just to write this out explicitly, we have the propagator equal, well, defined as as follows. Okay, and so notice here that we're not integrating over the final point Q0, and we're not integrating over the initial point Q0, and we're not integrating over the final point Qn, but we're integrating over all of the intermediate points inside. And so we can maybe see this more intuitively if we draw a nice graph, a pictorial of what's going on. So we have on this axis time, And on this axis, we have position. And we start off at a point, Q0. And then I divide this up into equal time intervals. So I'm going to call this delta, 2 delta, 3 delta. And the final interval is t, and then we have n minus 1 delta, n minus 2 delta. And then all of the time intervals in the middle. And so then we take a bunch of different parameters different points Q1. And so we consider a path that goes from Q0 to each of those points. And then, you know, the path can take on all sorts of different paths. So you can call this position 1, position 2, position 3, position n minus 1, n minus 2, and n minus 1. And so apart from all the like mathematical details involved in taking the limit of n goes to infinity, you can see that this is going to be a sum over all possible paths going from Q0 to Qn. And so what do I mean by the sum and the amplitudes for the paths? So the sum over the paths is just going to be an integral over all possible points. And the amplitude for the paths is, of course, the product of the propagators. Okay, so now we're just going to look at this in a little bit more detail, and we'll just consider one of these subintervals. So we have k qj plus 1, starting at qj. And so where is our, okay, so there's our, the expression inside the bra and the kit. So because delta is small, we're going to be able to just do an expansion around and the parameter delta. So I'll just do a Taylor series expansion only to a couple of orders. I think that should be a plus, but it's a minus in my notes. You think it's a minus? Yeah, I forget how to Taylor expand. Okay, great. Okay, so now I can just expand everything in the brackets and write the first part as a inner product of Qj and Qj plus 1. And then we have the linear term. And then we have a bunch of terms of order delta squared. Okay, so the first term is obviously going to be a delta function because it's an inner product of these two, of the bra and the kit. So and try not to get confused between the delta for the delta function and the delta for the time interval. I mean, it should be obvious from the context, but I just wanted to point that out. And then I'm going to write this in terms of one possible definition of the delta function. Which is the Fourier transform of a constant. So we're going to leave that for now, and we'll use it later. But first, we'll have a look at the second order term. Sorry, this is the zeroth order term, and now we'll look at the first order term. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is actually take this expression for the Hamiltonian and insert it into this term here, and then I'm also going to put in another resolution of identity. Okay, and the next step, I want to do a couple of things. One of them is I want to move this operator through this integral and then act it on this momentum ket. And then I want to also act this position ket in that direction, this position operator onto the position bra on the left side. And so then I can write everything in terms of eigenvalues. And then because everything is now just a complex number, I can move this bra all the way over through the expression. And then I'm just going to write these expressions in terms of the delta function defined as that expression. So now I can pull the, I can write everything in terms of a integral over dp. Okay, so at this point, you may notice that this expression is kind of asymmetric in terms of q j plus, q subscript j. So here we have a difference between the two q j plus 1 and q j. And here the potential is written just in terms of q j plus 1. And so if we had inserted the resolution of identity on the left of the Hamiltonian, then we would have gotten an expression that's a function of q j. And that would have been asymmetric, you know, in the other subscript. And so typically what people do is they just take a average of the two and write everything in terms of a parameter q bar that is the difference between the two points. And so in the end, it kind of comes out in the wash because you're going to take a limit as n goes to infinity. But for now, we're just going to rewrite everything in terms of this this average of two values, two positions. So let's define qj bar as the difference, the average of qj and qj plus one.
Once you perform the integration in the potential part over the pj, that basically becomes a delta function, so there is no distinction really between qj plus 1 and qj, right? So we could all easily just...
Yeah, that's another way of seeing it, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think it's still useful to do that definition. But yeah, you could define, you could write it in any way that you like. Okay, so now what I want to do is combine the zeroth order term and the first order term and put everything back into the expression of the propagator. Okay, and now I'm going to identify this as the Hamiltonian again and rewrite everything in terms of a general Hamiltonian. And I also notice that this is a Taylor expansion of the exponential, so I'll just rewrite it in terms of an exponential. So here I have the Hamiltonian now written in terms of this new average coordinate. And of course, we have this correction due to the second order term. Okay, so now we want to, all of this is just an expression for one of these guys. But really, we have a whole, a product of all of them. So we want to now combine all n propagators to come up with the final amplitude for the path. And I'm also going to write the difference of the two points divided by the time as the time derivative of the position. So now we have a path is equal to an integral over all of the different pjs. So I'll denote that as a product. J equals to 0 all the way to J equals n minus 1. So a few things happened here. One thing is that I'm being a little bit sloppy with the notation, but this product here is, how do we want to see this? Yeah, this product is only referring to this part here, and then the sum here is only referring to the part inside the exponential, I believe. And the other thing I've done is I've neglected the term that's this to the power of n, because that's going to go to 1 in the continuum limit. Okay, and so now we can get an expression for the total propagator. So here we had propagator being the sum of all of the paths. But we know that the sum of paths was actually equal to an integral over all of the intermediate points. So we can write k is equal to a integral of all of the points, which I'm going to write again as in this product notation. So one for the positions, and then one for the momenta. Okay, so maybe I didn't want to go that far, but yeah, yes, Florin.
Now we have two times the index j, right?
Yeah.
Three times actually.
So yeah.
Which one switch?
So the. Yeah. So this index is only referring to that part. This index is only referring to that part, and that index is only referring to that part. I know it's kind of sloppy. But I'm following a set of notes, a set of lecture notes they're notes, or it's a paper by Richard McKenzie. So in the notes that I'm going to give you, there's a link to Richard's original paper. It's a fair bit longer and it has more detail, but it's really awesome and I encourage you to go read it, especially if you're not very familiar with path integrals. But so I'm following his notation and I didn't dare try to like change it because then I was going to probably make some awful mistakes. So let's just stick with this notation. But you should read this as this index referring to this bit, this index referring to that bit, and then the index and the sum referring to that bit. Okay, so one thing to note is that there are n integrals for the momentum and n minus one integrals for the position. And now what we'd like to do is take the limit as n goes to infinity. And so then what we get is an integral over all of the functions, p of t and q of t. And so we're going to use the following notation for that. So this is the first important result here that we have, and this is goes by the name as the phase space integral, path integral. And so these d's, they should be thought of as functional integrals. I never remember the name for this. But the way you should think about this is that it's an integral over all of these different functions rather than integral over single variables. And so this is kind of a, how to say it? Like, it's a compact way of writing it, but you should really think about like what this means is actually take that integral and, you know, in practice, whenever you go to solve things, you're going to look at it in this form, but this is just a nice compact way of remembering what's going on. So it's a shorthand way for remembering that we're going to look at this bit and in the end take n equals to infinity. Okay, so that's the phase space path integral, but often we can simplify things because the Hamiltonian is going to take the standard form, which is p squared onto m plus some sort of potential, and then we can actually carry out some of these integrals. Yes? You're saying these things represent different things. Yeah, that's fine. Okay, you'd like this to maybe have some sort of like different thing. Okay, that's fine. Yeah, so did everyone catch what that meant? What was your name again?
My name is Gunjin.
Gunjin? Yeah, so what Gunjin was saying was that since this is a shorthand notation to mean something like this, but here we have a product from j equals 1 to n minus 1, and here we have a product from 0 to n minus 1, we shouldn't use the same symbol as shorthand for these two different things. And so he suggested that we distinguish one of them with a little tilde. Okay, so now, how much time have we got? Good. Okay, so now let's put in the explicit expression for h, and we can perform some of these integrals. Okay, so if we insert that into this expression, we can write the propagator as so here we're going to have the product over the positions. And then a part that only depends on the position. And then we have a separate part that is an integral over the momenta. Oh gosh, there's a lot of writing in this lecture. Okay, so we can see that now these integrals are uncoupled. We have a separate integral over the positions and a separate integral over the momentum. And now I'm going to make use of this Gaussian integral, which I've written up there. And so I'll use this a few times, which is why I wanted to put it up. So using the Gaussian integral, we'll be able to rewrite things as follows. Actually, now as I'm writing this, I'm remembering that someone pointed out an error somewhere, a typo, at this point in the lecture last year, and I bet I didn't fix it. So keep your eyes out. Maybe there's something, something up here. Pardon me? Yeah, where is it? Yeah, thank you. That isn't the thing, but that is a thing. That's just a transcription error from here to there. I guess I'm just used to always putting infinities. The other thing is if you try and write a H instead of a H bar, I always just end up crossing the H bars. It's terrible. Okay, so we're going to make use of this integral, and this will give us the propagator. Maybe I'll use a new board. You guys are going to have a lot of fun solving these things in quantum field theory. I'm glad I don't have to do it. Oh, okay. Right. So now what I'm going to do is take this thing out. It doesn't depend on J, so it's just going to be this argument to the power of n minus 1 on 2, or n on 2. And then because I have a product of exponentials, I can move this product into the argument of the exponential and turn it into a sum. So I'll have this term out the front. Again, this part here. Okay, and then everything inside the argument of the exponential. Okay, and you may notice that the argument here is a discrete approximation to the classical path. And so we can rewrite this in shorthand as this integral over the functions q of t and then a path that just depends on the classical path. And so this is the second result, and it's known as the configuration space path integral. Okay, and again, this thing should be just taken as shorthand for this expression here, and then in the end, taking the limit to as n goes to infinity. Okay. Okay, so we've, yes, Lauren.
Yeah, question. We used a time-independent potential, right?
I imagine so.
Does this also hold for time-dependent potential or more generally?
You know, I'm not sure of that. I'd have to double check.
I think it does. I think you just use the time ordering.
Yeah, because it follows the exponential when you split there.
Right.
That's where you the long time dependency.
Right. Yeah, so my guess is that things get more complicated. Probably there's a way around it. I don't know. Is that a reasonable statement to make? Okay. Cool. Yeah, so we've derived these two two path integrals, the phase space path integral and the configuration space path integral. And for the rest of the lecture, I just wanted to cover a few simple examples. Yesterday, I went over time, and I don't want to do that. I want to finish at 1:45. So I'll probably only get through the first example, which is the free particle. The other one that I wanted to do was the simple harmonic oscillator. But again, I can just defer it to tomorrow's tutorial, which means that you guys will get to work with it yourself. So let's try and do the first one. Okay, so for the free particle, the potential is zero, so we have a nice simple Hamiltonian. And first, I'm just going to compute the result using standard quantum mechanics, and you'll see that it's just a couple of lines, while the path integral way is a bit more involved. But it'll be nice to have a known example to compare to. So the propagator will be the overlap between the initial point evolved for time capital T, and the final point Q prime. So I will now insert the Hamiltonian. And insert a resolution of identity. I think I have another typo. Jeez. And because this is an operator, I'm now going to act it on this cat and get, and after I act the operator on the cat and get the eigenvalue, this will now be an expression that is a number, so I can move the bra through everything and take the inner product of Q prime and P. And then this, we can just evaluate the overlap between these two, which is, so that gives us this part here. And now I want to make use of the Gaussian integral again to write. Okay, I think I remember now what the error was. I didn't have a squared here, so it's all fixed. Okay, so that's the result that we get using classical mechanics. So now let's see if we can use the path integral formalism to try and get the same result, just to show us. Yes?
Is it
to T, yes. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to start with the configuration space path integral, and I'm going to interpret the shorthand notation. So I will write this as the limit as n goes to infinity of. So this bit is the bit in front of the integral. Okay, so I must have, what I've done is I've taken this q dot to equal whatever I defined it as up there. So I've inserted that into here.
Delta, that should be a delta.
Have I lost
there's
it?
A delta there.
There's a delta here. Oh, there's a here, you mean? No.
Yes.
What do I? Oh, God. I'll just write down what I have and then we can figure out how we got there. Okay, yeah, I don't think it's obvious. I think I'm just using a result. Because I have a note here saying that we're going to look at, so that these intervals, they're Gaussian, so they can be evaluated exactly. But the problem is that they're coupled, and so you need a whole bunch of tricks to do it. And it also says that we're going to look at it in the tutorial, so that's good. Yeah, I remember the tutorial problem now. Yeah, cool. Okay, so we'll just plow ahead. Okay, and then we notice that nd is the time interval t. So we can write that as so is that the same? Yep. So we've come to the same result as we got using the standard quantum mechanical treatment. But here, of course, to get there, we had to solve a bunch of coupled Gaussian integrals, which is possible, but is time-consuming. Okay, so a few things to notice. Is that obvious? Yes. So this thing here is the action for a classical particle, a particle moving along the classical path. And I'm going to restore the H bar using dimensional analysis so we can write the result as and so typically we find that the propagator separates into two parts. So here we have one part, and then the other part is just going to be a phase that depends on the classical action. So I'm not going to go through the harmonic oscillator result, the way that we solve the harmonic oscillator, but I will give you the result just to show you that it has a similar form to this one. And so we get something that.
In that final one, we were still H bar. Are you
yeah.
T next to this?
Yeah, hang on. Yeah. Should I not have it in? No.
I mean the exponential.
Let me.
You take classical velocity q prime minus q on t, but it's q prime minus q squared on the left.
So there should be a t multiplying it, you're saying? Yeah, I think that makes sense. Okay. Yeah, so again, we have a bit here that turns out to not depend on, sorry, yes.
Oh, yeah, so maybe I was just going to ask this, but the absolute value of k squared is then the probability to go from q to q prime.
Yes.
But if you take the absolute value of this one,
yes. Yeah, I think that's fine. Why is it fine?
It's fine because it's homogeneous, right? You have any potential. So for every two parallel points, what really is going to matter is the time that you're dealing
with. Yep.
But you already like to take you take Q as your starting point, right?
Q is arbitrary.
Yeah, but then you still need like the distance between Q and Q. So like you expect like this kind of Gaussian spreading.
But I think that the distance is given by this time t, which is in this bit.
Yeah, but then you can have like infinite.
It's also not causal, right?
Not that.
Okay. So the final point was that it takes a similar expression to here where we have this phase that depends on the classical action and another separate part. Okay, so I am just going to wrap up just to give you a few points to summarize the lecture in case you've been sleeping. So we can reformulate quantum mechanics using path integrals, and as we've seen, at least in one example, doing things using path integrals gives the same result as standard quantum mechanics, but it's actually more involved. But it'll turn out that this type of formulation is very useful in quantum field theory. And so the amplitude for a particle to get from one point to another can be calculated by taking a sum over all possible paths from one point to another. And the final point is that it often is the case that the propagator splits up into these two parts, one part that is the phase that corresponds to the classical action and some other part which contains some information about the problem. Okay, so now we've kind of looked at three different things in this course. We looked at wave functions, we looked at Dirac notation, and then we looked at this path integral formalism. And so tomorrow what I'm going to do is introduce the tensor product structure that we have in quantum mechanics. And that's really cool because it leads to probably the most interesting thing in quantum mechanics, which is entanglement. And this kind of makes it a natural place to introduce quantum mechanics in terms of open quantum systems. So when we have a system of interest that's entangled with something else, but we're only interested in describing that particular system rather than, you know, treating everything as unitary dynamics, then we can introduce this kind of more compact formalism which treats the system of interest in terms of a density matrix, and then it treats evolution as non-unitary evolution and measurement in terms of generalized measurements rather than the measurements that we've been dealing with. So all of that is going to be the focus of the three-week course that Joe Emerson is teaching, but I wanted to sketch out kind of an overview of the course before we go into it. So that's it for today, and see you guys in the tutorial tonight. Not tonight, this afternoon.